Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, the podcast which aims to take you behind the scenes of the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, as well as the automotive and social media worlds. I am your host, Sam, from that YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, and alongside me, it is of course, Mr. Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
It is. Hello.
How are you doing, son?
All right, mate.
You've had a busy day, haven't you?
Extremely, yeah.
Travelling all around the country.
What time is it now?
Selling whips. It is 7:21 in the evening.
Okay, so this is hour 15.
Hour 15 of your day.
Yeah.
You're like Kevin Hart or Dwayne The Rock Johnson when they go, to be successful.
Oh, I'm a machine, aren't I?
You don't sleep.
No.
But I'm so glad that you've graced us now with our presence because we are back with another episode. We have a lot to discuss today because finally we are getting around to it. Maybe our most controversial episode to date. Let's wait and see. But it is the McLaren special.
And I'm not going to go in. I'm just going to tell the truth.
You're going to try not to go in. We have done a Ferrari special. We have done a Porsche special. And we've done a Lamborghini special. Did we do the Porsche special? No.
No.
Sorry.
You wouldn't let me.
Coming soon.
Because you said the Porsche special, there's no point in you being here.
No, exactly. You just monologue for an hour and a half about GT3 RSs.
I mean, it is fair that you're not here because you think GT2 RS is four-wheel drive.
Oh, let's not go into that again. If you missed last week's episode, go back and check it out to hear me make a complete fool of myself and claim that the GT2 RS was four-wheel drive.
But he did, to be fair, correct himself and he put his hands up, so don't go in on him too much.
I apologise as much as I could. But yes, this is now our McLaren special. Before we get into that, very excitingly, and off the back of last week's episode, we can now launch our Patreon. This is it.
I was amazed. I was reading some of the comments and I was amazed the amount of people that actually like us.
What? So am I, if I'm honest. It's always quite nice to see. Mainly the support is for you, I'll be honest. I do think I'm a bit of a spare part on this podcast. Your laugh seems to be the most popular thing on this channel. But yes, unbelievably, we kind of almost came up with it last week, is just by accident, the thought of a Patreon, a way for you guys to support this podcast, get involved with this podcast. And the feedback was so strong and so good that we thought, heck, let's just launch it. Now, it's important to say that we will continue producing these podcasts no matter what. We love doing it.
Love doing them.
But as mentioned in our previous episode, financially at the moment, it's not the most sort of viable or motivating thing that we do. And lots of you said that you'd be willing to sort of, you know, get involved, help pay for the rent of studios like this, increase our production quality, bring in an editor, maybe some graphics, some B-roll. People always want B-roll.
Yeah, they do.
You know, so all of these different elements, you know, a Patreon will help us to do that. So if you don't know what Patreon is, it basically allows you, the viewer, to get involved with the podcast at varying levels, starting from £5 a month, going up to £35 a month. Depending on what stage you kind of become a patron of this podcast, you can get involved with live Q&As that Tony and I are going to do. You can get merchandise. You can come on the podcast, whether that's literally physically in the room or via a dial-in. It just depends what you want to do. You don't have to do anything. You can just keep sitting there and enjoying the podcast for free.
Yeah.
You don't
have to
become a patron, but for those of you that might want to or might want to support this podcast, we love you. We adore you for doing so. And I promise any money raised by the Patreon is going to go straight back into the production of this podcast.
Yeah, because what we raise honestly won't probably be enough to support us anyway. So,
no,
yeah, exactly. It's not going to be life-changing.
We're not going to suddenly be recording in Marbella from our villa.
No.
I think instead, as I say, hopefully some nice graphics and some slightly better editing, some filming, some more cameras, things like that. So anyway, I'll put a link below if you want to check it out. I think it's patreon.com/behindtheglass. I might have got that wrong. So check out our social media pages. We'll be promoting that over the
days. You know what? I'm glad we're going
to
do it as well. Because the main thing is, because it's not about the money, it's about giving something back.
Well, yes.
To everyone that watches us, because a lot of people do watch us. And just very quickly, over the last few weeks, I've met quite a lot of these people and I've bought their cars. And you know what? They've all been an absolute pleasure to deal with. All real nice people. The cars, they're obviously, because they're all enthusiasts, all the cars have been lovely. And I'm going to shout out a little lad called Max.
Okay.
Watches a podcast with his dad. And he was amazed that I come up and collected his dad's car. So
go on, Max.
Hello, Max.
Go on, Max. You're a legend. But no, you're so right. And we've actually spoken about this off podcast before. Now, don't tell the others, but I actually prefer the podcast audience to my main channel audience because you guys are very awkward because you guys are loyal. Like that, you come back every episode. We love the engagement. We love reading your comments. We love it when you correct us when we say something wrong,
which is all the time.
We love your suggestions of topics. You know, it's just a great interaction, and the Patreon I think will enable that to go a level further for those of you that want it. As I say, interactive Q&As, being able to suggest topics, being able to come on the show, etc., etc., but also get hold of exclusive merchandise and even come to our live recordings when we can finally get back out and do them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's why we kind of want to reward you, because don't get me wrong, I love the main channel audience, but they're very varied. They come and go. I get new ones here and there. They don't always know what's going on. Whilst you guys don't miss a trick.
No, they don't.
When I filmed when I released the 458 video this week, I did have some guys from the podcast being like, last week, Sam, you slagged off this car. Why are you now being so nice about it on the main channel?
On you.
Because I record these podcasts after filming, I often have more thoughts post-filming.
Yeah.
And I make realizations. Anyway, yes, we love you. Thank you for the support. Patreon, go check it out. Now, before we move on to McLaren, I can see you foaming at the mouth, Tony. So excited. Ready
to... Tired.
Ready. Oh, yeah. Probably true. I just want to quickly touch on the fact that, I don't know if you saw this, because this kind of came out today, Geneva International Motor Show cancelled for 2021
next
year, and now for sale.
Yeah, I mean, that's that then.
That's that, isn't it? I mean, yeah, at the end of the motor show, I think, the most prestigious, arguably, international motor show of the year, Geneva, got cancelled earlier this year because of coronavirus. However, already a number of big name manufacturers had pulled out of that event because they charge tens of millions of euros to have a stand, to have presence at Geneva. And most manufacturers were like, jog on, I'm over it.
Yeah.
And now with Corona, I think most other manufacturers realise, well, there's just literally no point. We're better off launching things online. So yeah, we're both in agreement there, aren't we? That's probably a massive change in the way that cars are launched.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see Festival Speed, what happens with that going forward.
I'm not going to say anything yet because I don't want to jump the gun.
You know something?
Yeah, I do know lots. But I think it would be wrong placed to talk about it just now.
Okay, fine.
But yes, I also worry, and knowing what I know, I worry quite greatly.
Because it's expensive as well. It's very expensive.
Oh my God.
It is,
you know, I know it happens on a very nice estate, and it looks fantastic, but don't always think that doesn't mean it doesn't cost a bomb.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's come back to that in a few weeks' time when hopefully I'll have some more information that I'm allowed to share with you. But anyway, I think it's time. Enough preamble. We should get into it. So, our McLaren special. I don't quite know why I'm going to title this podcast, but it's probably going to be something along the lines of like, what went wrong? Or like, why?
Or where do we start?
Yeah, that too. Well, let's start. Let's start on a positive note. So, McLaren, both of us, can we just clarify, are experienced in McLaren ownership and McLaren cars.
Correct.
I think between us, we've probably driven most McLaren models.
Yep.
But yes, you owned a 570S, I owned a 540C. And I think a few years ago, we were both pretty positive about the brand, especially during the My or F-Type replacement series. And when we were both owners of the cars, we were talking about how great they were. We went on that supercar driver's trip to Scotland. We've got the best cars here. We love our cars. But then the audience really started to pick up on the fact that sort of 6 months on from selling our cars, which again, we both kind of did at a similar time, we started to talk about the brand in a bit of a negative way. And I've dilly-dallied and I've had positive moments, I've had negative moments, but I think at this point, it's quite a regular theme of our show that we're a little bit negative about McLaren cars.
Yeah.
So, as I say, let's focus on the positive. When McLaren came along with the 12C, what were your initial thoughts?
That's fast. So I had
were
a 12C
you excited?
Spider.
You had a 12C Spider?
I had a 12C Spider.
I never knew that.
Black one, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was stock, but...
Sure.
But I bought it you to used sell it. And yeah. I used it, yeah, yeah. And 458 rival at the time,
of
obviously.
Of course.
Not even close in terms of comparison, performance, engineering. In every way, it was better than the 458 in terms of the way it was mechanically built. But that was where it ended very quickly.
I think it became general knowledge very quickly that whilst McLarens were unbelievably quick and arguably better than Ferraris and even Porsches and definitely Lambos at the time, they were potentially boring.
They missed something.
They missed something. And I think Top Gear kind of didn't help with this factor because I think they sort of said it sounded like a vacuum cleaner and, you know, it was a little bit cold and a little bit grey. And also the looks of the car. The 12C, which I actually think has aged incredibly well. I'm actually a big fan of the 12C now. But when it came out, in comparison to Gallardo's 458s, then later Huracans, GT3s, etc., it looked dull. It looked boxy.
Yeah, yeah.
But now it's aged well and I actually see a lot of McLaren F1 in the car, so it kind of makes a bit more sense. But so early on, I was kind of with you. Like I was excited theoretically, like quick, well, this is interesting. British brand, Lewis Hamilton was driving for McLaren. I was a massive fan. I was like, this is cool. But I wasn't like I would get one instead of a Ferrari, but I was intrigued. Then 650S came along pretty quickly.
Very quickly.
Very quickly.
Like a year, two years after?
Yeah, and that was confusing but also rewarding in the sense that it looked much better. It looked like a supercar, but it was fundamentally the same car with different bumpers.
Yeah.
And that was the first hint, I think, at what McLaren was going to become.
Yeah.
Tony, sound a bit more enthusiastic. You're just waiting to get to the point where you can actually rip them apart, but we've got to go through the chapters here.
Because I've got some positive things as well.
650S, I think, was a good step forward. It made the brand a little bit more sexy, a little bit more attractive. Shmi 150, big McLaren ambassador, got one in green after his 12C. And it's like, okay, this is cool. This is getting exciting. And then, I mean, we haven't touched on P1. We've got to come back to that. 675LT came out. And for me, that's when I personally went, okay, this is now McLaren have arrived. I am super excited by McLaren because this was a car that most journalists were saying was better than the Speciale, which I was like, oh, there's a dagger to my heart, but I will accept
cannot
it.
Cannot be true.
It cannot be true. Blasphemy. But it looked great, sounded amazing, was exciting. Everyone was getting so hyped about it. Baby P1 that they were describing. And for me, that was my turning point. Was it the same for you?
So my initial opinion of McLaren is that I think they actually shook up the supercar world and made all the other manufacturers step up and look at what they were producing and think we need to do better because this little English brand have come along and they're producing these cars. Look, let's be honest, on the face of them, were unbelievable. The performance stats, the carbon tub, never really seen in a road car before.
The mass-produced road car.
Mass-produced road car, yeah, for sure. And the how light they were, their handling, obviously it's all down to the tub, the gearbox, the aero, everything. It was all game-changing. And that's how I think they changed the supercar world.
And they're usable. I mean, all of the things you said, but they were just so easy to live with. The ride was unbelievably comfortable.
Yeah.
Wasn't too harsh. Around town, easy to maneuver. Quiet enough not to wake up the neighbors every time you started it up. Big boots, great big front boots. Practical.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, I spoke about in my 458 video that kind of moved the supercar world forward, but the 12C and 650S massively did so as well.
And they were clean inside. It was all, but okay, the sat-nav didn't work.
Yeah, that Iris system was a disaster, wasn't it?
But back then, mate, sat-navs didn't work in any of them.
Sure,
I mean, they were bad.
Yeah.
So you didn't have a lot to compare it to in that respect. But yeah, and then the problems started.
Okay, well, you hint at this. We need to go through sort of, I guess, what those problems would be. And we're going to come back to the P1 because there's a whole sort of separate narrative around that car. But I would say around the 675 LT, whilst I was getting super hyped and excited by it, that's when I first started to become aware of the fact that some of the cars did have a few glitches and issues. And Shmi 150 obviously had his blue car, which whilst we were down in Monaco with him, had a couple of little bits and bobs here and there. Nothing major, but stuff that was annoying that I was picking up on and going, oh, like,
That's not right.
And then another friend of mine, again, had a 650S, had a few glitches. But I just thought, okay, right, not really a big problem. For me, it was 720S that highlighted the issues. Now, we both bought our cars, I think, pre-720S.
We did, yeah.
So when the Sport Series came out, I got so hyped because there were those 675 RTs, 650Ss that I was, you know, going, oh, these are so cool. And suddenly it was a bit more accessible. Basically a baby version of those cars, especially with the 540C that I could potentially get into. And I think that was exciting. But at that point, we had no idea what was in store for us, I suppose.
Well, what happened with the Sport Series, obviously they launched the Sport Series, one, for affordability, and two, because they said that they sorted out all these problems and that this was the car, this was the sweet spot. I will never buy another McLaren again, me personally, but if I was, it would be a 675 LT. I think that's the best car they've ever made, and I think it always will be. In terms of, it is the most reliable, if you can say a McLaren is reliable. And I know there's going to be people shouting at me and saying, oh, I've had a McLaren for 3 years and I've never had any problem. You are a minority. 100% you're a minority. And we have so many different stories and things that we've seen and heard that we can back that up with. So
Yeah, no. And, you know, we'll elaborate on that in a second, I think, when we move on to 720S and on our own experience with our own cars. But you're right. And we're sort of hopping around all over the place here, but that's just because there's so much to discuss with this brand. And you're so right that I still lust after an LT. I would definitely, if I was a rich man, I'd have an LT. I think they are brilliant. I think they're amazing. And I think that was almost the culmination of the exciting McLaren journey. This positivity, this, as you say, this newcomer doing things better and in a different way to everyone else. And it was like, wow, like these guys have turned up and delivered an amazing car.
Yeah.
They do also still have issues, unfortunately. And again, we're going to elaborate on that too. But with the LT, it's just a fantastic all-rounder. The Sports Series, as I say, gave me the chance to kind of get close to that. And I had the most unbelievable experience driving one for the first time at the launch. It was actually the 570 GT launch in Tenerife, beautiful, amazing roads. There I am, a McLaren launch event, brand new supercars. And I was blown away because that was really my first time properly driving a McLaren. And I just thought, this is the best thing in the world. Drove the GT on one day and then the next day drove a 570S.
You considered the GT as well.
I really considered the GT.
We were close to buying the GT.
Until I went around a corner and found out it has much less downforce. Yeah. And I nearly binned it at about 45 miles an hour on the launch. And I was like, oh, maybe not the GT. It's a much softer car. And like, as I said, I drove the 570S the next day and I was like, holy, I mean, just unbelievable. And I obsessed over it. And I never thought, actually, that I was going to be able to stretch far enough. And of course, I couldn't reach the 570S, but I did get a 540C. And I would say almost instantly, I didn't regret the decision, but something was off. Having previously done F-Type and 4C and Audi TTS and all my previous cars, from the kind of minute I got in, I was like, yes. The 540, something was just a bit off. I collected it and it was a little bit disappointing, but on my way home, I had my first electrical issue. I'd pulled over at a supermarket and I was sitting there and suddenly went, bah, bah, ESC fault, bah, bah, return to dealer. And I was what the? I've just bought a car for £138,000. My first supercar, delivery mileage. I'm freaking out. It's more money than I can ever afford to spend. And you're telling me it's broken?
Yeah.
So I just turned it off, turned it on again. I was like, okay, fine, whatever. Happened three times more. I had to go back to the dealer. This is after 4 days after picking it up. So I'm like fuming. And that was kind of the start of the continuous electrical glitches which I had with that car. And they were always minor. Key not found, ESC fault, parking sensor fault, tire pressure monitor fault, whatever it might be, gearbox overheating. And we'll come back to that one in a second. But as I grew to understand the car a bit more, in and around town, dead. This, I gave me nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy driving it around town. It stressed me out. When I was out on a country road, amazing. Like so quick, great, reminded me of all the good things. But it had those electrical glitches.
Yeah.
And that took away from my experience. And I can't remember with the 570S, I feel like early days for you were quite positive. I don't remember you having that many issues straight away with your car.
I didn't have huge amount of issues. I had key not found, obviously.
Of course.
I had a radio and sat-nav issue as well. And I also got locked.
Oh, yes.
In one. Do you remember?
Not your car, but another car.
Another car.
You're so right.
So we got, so they'd given me a car because my car had gone in, I think. I can't remember now. It'd either gone in or they'd just given me a car for the weekend to use. And I pulled up outside my house.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And I was having some building work done at the time, and my best friend's a builder, and he was doing some building work. So I pulled up to talk to him about something. And I went, right, see you later, I'm going now. So I got in the car. Started the car up, drove 2 feet probably, cut out, dead, just completely dead, door shut, it just died.
Yeah,
so went to open the door, couldn't open the door, press start, nothing, gone. So I phoned McLaren, I said, I can't get out of the car.
I'm stuck in your car.
I'm stuck in the car.
That's our salesman's technique right there.
Yeah. And they said, there's a manual door release. Pop the manual door release, you get out.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you. So I popped the manual door release. Because there was no electrics or nothing, the window drops down a little bit for you to open the door. What? Wouldn't open.
Because it wouldn't drop down.
Because the window wouldn't drop down. So called back up and said, no, that don't work because, yeah, it's released the door, but it hasn't released the window. I still can't get out of the car. Now, imagine if I was on fire.
Oh, my God.
First of all.
Yeah.
So luckily I wasn't. And so they said, we don't really know what to do. We'll get someone from Dorking to call you. So anyway, this chief engineer phones me up.
Sure.
And says, yeah, we've had this problem before. We think we know what it
is. Always reassuring.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. If you want to get out the car, you're going to have to smash the window. And I said, sorry,
what?
And luckily my builder friend was the other side of the car. Obviously he was the other side of the door. So he's laughing at me, obviously, because I'm in this 170 grand car. Sure. I can't get out.
Of course.
And then he says, yeah, cover your eyes. You're going to have to smash the window.
Oh, my God.
I know. And I said, are you serious? And they said, yeah, you're not going to be able to get out. Like, that's the only way you can get out. So my builder friend was pulling the door and I was pushing it. Anyway, the window popped and I got out. The alarm going off, just went off for 2 hours until they come and collected it. The alarm was just going off outside my house. And the car had to be completely repainted because of the glass shattered everywhere. Sure. And it was an earth fault that it was common.
Sure.
That why didn't they just fix it?
Well, okay. So, and this is it really, right? It is, I think whenever we talk about McLaren problems, the majority of them, I would say, seem to come down to a quality control issue. Because they're little glitches, they're little oversights. Of course, there are cars that have caught fire, some very famously on social media. They're usually the bigger cars, the Sennas, the P1s, because people film them more. But plenty of other cars do catch fire as well from the rest of the range.
Of course.
But usually a lot of the problems are these small little annoying glitches which seem to be oversights from production level. You know, it's not gearboxes falling out, well, they do, but it's not gear, it's body panels coming apart, it's paint corrosion, it's electrical, just things that seem, it's like somebody's rushing these cars through the production line. And the biggest frustration I have, and the reason I've been vocal about my problems with McLaren or the fact that I've gone off them, is I feel like it's the biggest letdown, the biggest like injustice, because I actually still love the brand. I love the idea of the cars. Put me in a McLaren on a great road on a sunny day and that car is working. I love life. But almost every time that I've got close to that experience, something's gone wrong.
Yeah.
I've never been able to actually enjoy that moment apart from that very first launch event for the sports series.
Yeah.
And if I really think hard, there was probably something that happened on one of those two cars. I just don't remember.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing that annoys me. It's like they've got these great products, these great brands, and they could have just absolutely dominated the space. And when they were making the LT, they were, I think. They had the P1, which we now need to come on to. They had the LT, and it was like, wow. And then since then, they seem to have just been churning out cars, losing quality, losing production quality, to the point where people are sending cars back, people are getting hurt in cars, cars are burning down, and the value is falling out of them because people are like, what are these things?
Yeah, yeah. See, I disagree with you, as in they have a good product, they're a terrible brand because of the way they behave in terms of the their after sales, the cars they build. It's not acceptable for them to build or ask 250 grand for a car that's constantly causing problems and catching fire. Now, listen, we get people go in on us and say, well, they've only been around 7 or 8 years and other manufacturers' cars catch fire. True.
Totally true.
Absolutely. Porsche have had their runs, Lamborghinis have had their problems. But look how many cars they make and how many cars they've made down the years. As a percentage of McLaren cars that go wrong, to percentage of what they build, it's huge compared to the rest. When do you hear of Performantes or 488s or all the competitors of them really breaking? And we both have first-hand knowledge of them cars. I've driven all my cars really hard for long periods of time, and whenever I go on a trip in Europe and there's a McLaren there, it always breaks.
It's never going to make the rest of the trip, basically.
We had a 570 Spider with us once that was driving down the road, mate, and just falling apart. Yeah. like body parts
literally flinging off yeah.
off the car.
It was like a brand new car, wasn't it?
It's a brand new car.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not on, mate.
But you say the brand, you know, you don't value the brand or you don't see the brand value. Do you not think their image, you know, what they represent, their heritage, their history, and the look and the feel of the products is sort of not Apple-esque, but like it has this great ideology. What they're trying to achieve is fantastic. The actual product itself, I think, is like the 720S is an incredible car. Like, yeah. There's no getting away from what it can achieve. The comfort, the performance, the lap times, everything.
Yeah.
It's just that we know it doesn't work all the time. The values fall out of them. they're trying to almost cover off too many bases and they're producing too many of them. But step away from that for a second. I understand and I still think that they're a desirable product because of what they represent. I get why people go out and keep buying them.
Well, I don't think they do keep buying them. I mean, well, that's the problem. I don't think it's a thing, mate. I mean, I think normally, again, I think they're a little bit like Aston Martin, where you buy an Aston Martin or a McLaren once, you never buy another one. You know, when you buy Ferraris or Porsches, that's all you buy.
You're hooked for life.
You're hooked. You're in because they. Okay, this is a whole nother subject, and they're all making too many cars nowadays. But McLaren had such a good niche at the start of all this; they could have been the best, and they had an opportunity to be the best because, fundamentally, at the start, they made the best car. Okay, it was a bit soulless, but they could have engineered that in essentially. But they messed it up by trying to run before they could walk, and they've ruined what they had. And the problem is with people, they don't forget, mate. People don't forget. And once you buy one and you have a bad experience, especially when you've bought the German cars or the Lamborghini, which is German now, essentially, with Italians being allowed to draw something on there or whatever. And even the Ferraris. I mean, Ferraris don't break anymore, really. I mean, you get they have the odd problem. But
I'm sure they do, yeah.
Yeah, but not
as prolific as the McLarens.
They used to, yeah. or they used to. They were terrible.
Oh yeah,
years ago. Like,
they were terrible.
You own one.
Yeah, I know firsthand. Actually, I don't, because touchwood, my 360 continues to be amazing.
Yeah.
But that's a large thanks to AV Engineering, who just take immaculate care of it. But no, you're right. Of all of the manufacturers today, I would point out McLaren every time at being the least reliable of the supercar
for
manufacturers,
sure.
Second maybe to Koenigsegg, but anyway, that's another topic. Yeah. I think I've been trying to come onto it for a while now. The P1 stands out to me as a separate entity and actually represents all the hope that was McLaren, because we've talked about LT and at that same time, the P1, and still to this day, I think that is kind of like everything McLaren could have been, because all of the sort of soullessness,
yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
lack of soul.
Oh, no,
thank you. That some of the other models had. The P1 came along as this kind of snarling, blue flame emitting beast that looked impossible to tame, looked amazing on the road. Yeah. You saw there was fewer of them than the LAF and the 918. They were kind of for the wacky, the colors were amazing. Everything about it,
yeah,
incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
And you
yeah.
went, wow, if McLaren can make that, and now they're making the LT, oh my God.
Yeah.
And I think still today, P1s are fetching big money and still desirable because they do stand out from the crowd. And if only McLaren had looked at that and gone, well, why has that worked for us? We've actually built fewer than Ferrari and Porsche, and that car's doing really well. People are lusting after it. It's different. It's exciting. Let's not do that. Let's build triple the amount of Ferrari and Porsche. Let's just keep making more models, more cars. Oh, why hasn't that worked for us? Why? Yeah. Because I'm like, at what point did they go, let's ignore what's actually doing well for us, what's making us stand out, what's giving us our best chance at actually making a proper long-term success with this business, and actually go down a completely different route? And obviously, the result is shareholders, fundamentally.
Yeah, they want their money back.
People want their money back.
Of course.
And I say, you know, not a successful route. And the reason that we can kind of say that is that, unfortunately, McLaren are very vocal about the fact that they are in trouble.
Yep.
So we just found out literally in the last couple of days, they have received a bit of funding from the Bahrainis, who are a big, big owner of
again.
McLaren. Well, yeah, you say again. So they got $150 million, I think it is. Just 2 years ago, they had a $200 million investment. Now, it's a bit weird, this, because it's the McLaren Group, which obviously are three parts. You've got McLaren Automotive, which we're talking about a lot. There's McLaren Racing, which of course is the Formula One team. And is it Applied Technologies? Is that what they call the other? Or is that Williams that I'm thinking of? That's Advanced Technologies. Well, it's the sort of parts, the components for things that you never really think about. Mainly all in the racing side, but they build stuff for hospitals. They do lots, McLaren Applied Technologies. I'm pretty sure. Or, anyway, that's the third arm. So when the group is struggling, obviously the fact that the F1 team really hasn't been performing the last few years and has been losing sponsors plays a part of it. But as we're saying, automotive has been struggling because there are too many cars on the market not being sold and losing value. And, you know, a McLaren dealer will not buy a McLaren back.
No. Well, they have to, mate, because they keep going wrong.
Well, yes, but in terms of if you try and part X or trade in your McLaren, most McLaren dealers don't want to know.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a lack of confidence in their own brand and their own product.
For sure.
And so I think coronavirus has probably escalated an issue that was maybe bubbling under the surface.
Well, that's prominent for quite a lot of companies for this coronavirus. But this virus has literally just accelerated. We knew that. I said to you a couple of years ago that I think they're 5 years and they're in trouble, or not be here, because you cannot operate a business the way they're operating. You can if you're selling Fiestas and you're fooled and you sell tens of millions of them, but you're making a bespoke product. You can't sell tens of millions of them because that's not what it's about. Yeah. You're supposed to be special and
exclusive. So what can McLaren do to pull it around? Obviously, there are much cleverer people out there who will make those decisions. They'll be, you know, they are a huge group, as I say, a huge company. But I want them to succeed. I genuinely want them to succeed. But I feel if they continue down the road that they're going now, it is a downward slope, because I feel like consumers, customers are losing confidence. People are becoming aware of issues. There's a slight confusion about the number of cars or where they all sit. Hey, we could say the same about Ferrari, and we did in the Ferrari special.
Please don't
think of us being biased here.
Yeah, yeah.
But what can they do to pull it around, in your opinion?
So I think, and talking from personal experience.
But on a
smaller scale, because all we're talking about is noughts here. That's all it is. The scenarios are the same. We're just talking about noughts. So I had a similar problem when we went to coronavirus. What do we do? And the art to making money and having a good business is obviously keeping your overheads down. So unfortunately, McLaren are going to, if they're going to stay afloat, I think they've got to start again. They're going to have to throw a load of money at it. The model that they have now doesn't work. It's not a thing. You can't carry on like that. And if they do, they're just not going to be here. They're going to go bust. So they've got two options. They've got to cut what they're doing. So you cut your overheads. You stop making cars of the proportion. You change the way you do business, which is what I've had to do, obviously, because I've had to adjust because of the virus. So, and lots of businesses have had to adjust. McLaren do that or they go bust. That's the simple answer to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my side, you said that you'd never buy another McLaren, but I think from my side, I would if I had confidence. For example, 600LT, I drove that car, the launch at the Hungaroring, and thought it was unbelievable. Night and day from a 570S, and holy crap, in another universe to my 540C. And I was like, what a car. Like, and I would love, and I still got excited by the idea of going and ordering a 600LT and owning 600LT. But it gives me the heebie-jeebies now, because I would dread the ownership experience in case it went down that route of 540. And also, what we haven't really touched upon is resale value, because McLaren 600LTs now are cheaper than my 540C was when I bought it at 138 grand. You can go out and buy a 600LT at 130.
Yeah, yeah.
When they're what, 220 list with options?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the resale value is awful and they are hard to get rid of. And so as an owner, it's not an enjoyable experience. You buy this car, which, as I say, it is brilliant. And this is horses for courses, because when we talk about the fact that, you know, sometimes it can be a bit dull or a bit soulless, some people love that. They like the fact that it can be super usable. And so
yeah.
So I don't knock that side of it. But if you get the glitches, which I would say 7 in 10 cars probably have an issue, from just the speaking to people we know, receiving emails and messages, I would reckon 7 out of 10 McLarens have some kind of issue in their ownership life cycle. And then you come and sell it and realize you've probably lost 100 grand and no one wants it, including McLaren themselves. That's when you go, oh, I don't think I want to do this again.
Yeah.
So from my side, if McLaren really hunkered down on their quality control at factory, so that the cars stopped having issues, you never heard, you know, fine, the older cars, whatever, but cars are coming out, people going, they work great. I've never had a problem on this 765LT. I've never had a problem on this Senna. I've never had a problem on whatever it might be. Then I'm going to start going, okay, maybe they're figuring this out. And also, as you say, slow down.
Yeah, they've got to start again.
Start again or just slow down. I'm not against, you know, a million models because I think everyone's doing it. Porsche spread out into SUVs and now make a million different variations of cars. Same with Ferrari. Lambo are really the only people out there still making two models or three now with the Urus. But I just think they just need to make the cars a little bit more exclusive. Like back in the day when the LT came out and there were theoretically 500 coupes. You didn't see that. It was exciting when you saw it. Oh, cool, an LT. Now, you see 720S every fourth car.
Yeah.
And they're just there everywhere. And yeah. So they're less special. So for me, that's what would make me buy back into the brand. I can't begin to tell you how you would save a company financially because I think it's bigger than just selling cars and ownership experiences. But I would buy another McLaren when I had confidence, you know, that it wasn't going to poop value, that it was going to work. And yeah, I would have a 600LT, I'd have a 675LT. I wouldn't have a 765LT, it's just too much power. But
I think they've all got too much
power. I'd have a P1.
What do you mean?
If I won the Euro Millions, I'd have a P1.
If you won the Euro Millions.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm selling my 911 because I've got no money left. But
If you hang on a couple of months, you'd probably be able to buy a P1 for the same money.
Buy anything in a couple of months. Yeah. But yeah, so it's so hard and for me sad to talk about the brand in a negative way because I do get excited. And if I was ever given the opportunity to jump in a new car at a McLaren launch, which unfortunately I don't think will happen anytime soon, I know I would love it. I know I'd go, this car's amazing because they'll make it work on the day that I'm driving it. And I'll go, this is brilliant. Like, what a car. But I'll walk away going, I'm not going to buy one though because I'm too nervous.
What's gonna happen. Yeah. And I kind of... You know, as much as I won't buy another car, like I wanted them to succeed because the English brand, you want them to make a nice car. And the fact they are a bit soulless, they are really fast. And I don't actually like the engine either, to be fair. Like, it's very laggy. And if you're going to go technical in that respect, you know, it's
a lot of turbo.
It's a lot of turbo. And it's not particularly a great engine. And as well, which is their other problem, it's fundamentally the same engine from start to finish.
This is really brutal, and feel free to go in on me, people, but the 720S is essentially a 12C facelift.
Yeah, yeah.
like I know, like, and McLaren will be really cross that I've said that, because, okay, fine, they've... And hey, look, the F8 is essentially a 458 facelift. No stress.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, they've used so... Like, that same engine block reworked a million times over... That same carbon tub reworked a million times.
But that's because they've got no money. They can't afford to develop what they should be.
You know, hey, if you find a formula that works, go with it. Like 12C, 6. You know, we've talked about how.
But it doesn't work.
Well, no, but
it's not working, but
the car is great. Like that's what this is my big issue. This is why I can never be that definitive on whether I love or hate McLaren because the cars are great. They are. You can't deny that they are very good. Cars and what they set out to
achieve.
We've
just sat here for 45 minutes.
Slagging them off.
Highlighting the fact they're not good cars.
No, but okay, they're not good because they're not good cars to own.
No.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like they're
so
not good
cars.
What are
they good at? Good to look at?
At 0 to 60 times.
Good.
At going around a track very quickly.
For three laps.
For three laps before they catch fire.
Like, that's not even a joke.
That's not even a joke.
I mean, I've seen that.
Yeah, or brakes clam up, whatever it might be. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to put it. Is that my phone ringing? No. Sorry, I thought I was popping for 2 seconds. I thought I was the McLaren press office speaking like, shut this down. I stand by that the cars are good cars. They're just not good to own and they don't work.
So they're not
flawed.
Good cars,
they're flawed. That's what it is. They're flawed.
Let me tell you what I think. The idea's good. The cars are crap.
No, they're not crap, though.
They are,
that's
mate.
Wrong. No, they don't work. Like, they're not crap. No, they're not. Okay, they're not crap because go back to Scotland when we were surrounded by 488s, Aventadors, whatever. We both got out of our cars and we said, these are the two best cars here.
We also both got out and both said, we really want 488s.
We did, actually. That's a very good point.
I went and bought one.
And then I got back in and my key wasn't found. I couldn't start the car. But I don't... I know that we've gone down this path, both of us, of becoming slight McLaren haters. And I don't want to be that guy. And I'm trying to be fair and honest. And there was a time when we loved those cars. And I still stand by. And you don't have to agree with me. But I stand by that they are good cars fundamentally. They're just flawed, and the quality control is appalling. The value, they're making too many of them, blah, blah, blah. But the actual car is a head-to-head battle with anything else. It's a good car.
Okay, so So the positive that I will take from it is that they're well engineered.
Okay.
But they're not a good car, mate. Because a car that you pay £250,000 for that doesn't start is not good. I mean, you can't do that.
So if you had a friend come up to you now and said, I've just got my Christmas bonus, or I've made Euro Millions or done whatever, and I want to go out and buy a McLaren, what would you say to them?
Defriend me. So I have people come up to me quite a lot and ask me about, should I buy this and should I buy that?
Of course.
And
I do it with you daily.
You do it with me daily, yeah. And I always say to them, whatever you do, don't buy a McLaren or Aston. And I'm right. Because they're crap.
All right, cocky pants.
No. I'm just saying that there'll be people out there that love them. And actually, if I had to choose between the two, and I'm not really talking about Aston, I would have an Aston over a McLaren. That's how much I don't want a McLaren.
Because at 75 grand these days, 570Ss seem a steal. Like, what a theoretical car for 75 grand. But you would still say to somebody, no.
No. Buy an R8 V10 Plus.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But
because it'll work.
Yeah, no. I'm with you. And I think I would probably give the same advice. But I'm also like, maybe you just need to experience that yourself. Because if you're one of the lucky people who get 3 out of the 10 cars that work, you don't have a problem with them. You buy it at 75 grand, or you buy a 720S at 135 grand and you can sell it a year later and only lose 25 or 30.
If you can sell it.
Like, good on you. Like, what a car. Like there are good stories out there. They do get it right sometimes. People do love their McLarens. People do have positive McLaren ownership experiences. But as Tony pointed out, that is the minority, and therefore I agree. That would be my kind of advice. And it is my advice when people ask, should I buy a 540C? Should I buy a 570S? I'm like, look, just be aware they have a lot of problems. It's an unbelievable car for the money, performance-wise, but they have their problems. If you're willing to live through that and you're not too worried about resale, then yeah, crack on some.
Well, we haven't even spoke about after sales yet. I mean...
Well, I was spoiled there because of what I do online.
Because of your platform, yeah.
Yeah. And I was naive because I didn't realize I was getting VIP treatment. So I was like, everyone, youth McLaren Ascot, they're amazing. And then I found out that everyone had a miserable time because they could never get booked
in. Yeah, I think there's a couple of them that are okay, the centers. But again, the centers are the franchise dealers. They're let down by the brand, mate. Mm. So, it's not always their fault. But I mean, in the early days, they just didn't have the capacity. They were making all these cars and there was like 4 dealers in the country.
Yeah, you could never get an appointment, could you? That was famously, you could never get your car booked in.
Yeah, yeah. And you never get it booked in and it always broke.
And it was 400 miles away from your house, the service centre.
Yeah.
We really should have involved Shmee on here because I think his story is very interesting, having owned however many he's owned, 5 McLarens, I don't know what, all of which slightly different experiences. I would have been fascinated to hear his side of the story. And maybe it's a chance to revisit this at some point because I know it's going to be a
Would he tell it popular. Though? Would he tell
his experience? I'm sure he would. Like he's good, Tim, like that. Like his videos are always very positive and upbeat for sure. But if you put him on the spot, he doesn't lie. He doesn't hide stuff. So if he's had problems and we asked him, have you had a problem with your car? I'm sure he would say.
Yeah.
But I think that's somebody who goes against your statement of once you buy a McLaren, you don't buy another one.
Yeah.
There's a man that does. Okay. Keep buying them. So there's clearly a reason. And I would have loved to have had that insight. And as I say, I know lots of you out there, will have positive stories about McLarens. We'll have been on your third or fourth McLaren. We'll love them. We'll go against everything we've said. This is as always, only ever our own personal view. But I do think we are in pretty good position to give these opinions.
Say, I think so.
Both being owners, you being in the dealership. I have driven, I tried to rack it up earlier, 12C, 570S, 570 GT, 540C, 600 LT, 675 RT, 650S, Senna, P1.
I mean, 720S.
720S. I mean, we've driven most of them. So we do have a pretty good grip, I think. But let us know. What are your thoughts? Are you wary of McLaren? Do you lust after McLaren? Had you heard about these problems? Is this the first time you've heard anything negative?
I cannot believe that.
But you know what? I can. There really? Are a lot of people out there that still don't know. It's very much a thing that's spoken about amongst supercar owners, car buyers, blah, blah, blah. But mass public, I don't think it does get spoken about. The first time I think it became known that cars have issues was when Salamandra and Senna caught fire. And suddenly people went, oh, what? Because he was very vocal about the fact that, you know, his wasn't the first.
Yeah.
So people started to go, oh, hold on a second. But I think a lot of people out there still think, oh, it's a great opportunity. And what a steal at X amount of money.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. They seem like great value for money.
Yeah, until you've got to live with it.
Exactly.
Then it's not great value.
Anyway, we got through that. I think we weren't that controversial. I mean, McLaren, if you're listening, as I say, I do still kind of love you. And as a Formula One team, amazing. You're brilliant. I do like the brand, but I just, I've fallen out of love with your cars. And I think you've got problems that you need to address. And
I think they know that.
I think they probably do know that. And I hope they don't hate us too much. But I do feel like maybe neither of us are getting invited on any McLaren events soon.
Thank God for that.
Just a reminder, the Patreon has now launched. I say no pressure at all, but I'm just reminding you because we had so many amazing comments and feedback last week when we suggested doing one. And it would be great to have some more of you involved and taking part in the show, but also supporting us and allowing us to improve. Because, you know, we will. That's the thing. We can improve.
We will.
Always.
Yeah, yeah.
We're here to be better for you. So if you're watching on YouTube, make sure to hit subscribe, turn on notifications for future episodes. And if you're listening to us, make sure to keep following on whatever platform. Follow Tony on Instagram at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales. Check out the stock that he's got in stock at the moment. It seems to be ever changing, flying in and out. But you can head over to gravelwoodcarsales.co.uk. Yeah, well done. Got there. And we will catch up with you very, very soon. Adios. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.